Today's Shi'ez Masechta Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Nun Zayin. We will begin Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach on Daf Kuf Nun Zayin Amud Aleph towards the top of the Mishnah. It says the Mishnah, Nafal Bayis Olav Al Aviv. A house fell on him, on Reuven, and on his father Yaakov. And they both perished. And we don't know who died first. Aishalav Val Merishav. Or on Reuven, and somebody who Reuven is supposed to inherit upon his passing, his brothers, his uncles that don't have any close relative, his wife, for Haysalov, and Reuven carries a responsibility to pay Ksubas Isha, or Reuven carries a responsibility of paying off a Baal Chayv, paying off to somebody to whom he owes money. And now the question is, who died first? Yosheav, Shimon and Levi, who are the sons of Yaakov, the brothers of Reuven, or Reuven's children, Chanuch Upalu, Omrim, Haben Meis Rishon, say that Reuven died first, Vakach Meisav, and then Yaakov died, and therefore Yaakov's assets went directly to us and not to Reuven. And therefore, we don't owe any money. We don't owe any money to Reuven. And we don't owe any money to this Ksuba. We don't owe any money to this person who their father owed money to. And therefore, this person will lose out. And Baal Chayv, the people to whom the money is owed, Imrim Ha'av Meis Rishon, Yaakov died first. Reuven still was alive when Yaakov died, and Reuven obligated himself that any assets that he will have at the time of his death will be obligated to pay off this obligation, and only afterwards, after Yaakov died and Reuven was his Yairish, did Reuven die. But there was a moment that Reuven was the Yairish, and since there was a moment that Reuven was the Yairish, that's the moment that they are allowed to collect. And as I said, and Reuven had obligated himself that anything that he had at the moment of death will be used to pay off his obligation. So Beis Shammai's opinion is that the two parties who are disputing here should divide the money. And Beisel Aimrim, Nechasim B'chaskasim, we leave everything at status quo. And since we leave it at status quo, because Ein Sofik Moitzim Deivadai, HaMoitzim Chaveroi Olav Haraya, and therefore, unless the Baal Chayv could definitively prove that Yaakov died before Reuven, the halacha is that they don't have the right to collect it. Beis Shammai's opinion, however, is any document that has a loan is considered as if it was already collected. So if Yaakov died first, then it's not that it's like certainly in the property of the Yarshim, that they are certainly holding on to it. Because the Baal Chayv are as much Muchzokim as the Yarshim. And therefore, since they both have an equal claim, therefore, says Beis Shammai, we divide it. Tonight we divide the obligation. Begins the Gemara Tanan Hosam Havas Chaver Bishtar. That means, as we know, if somebody borrows money and there was a shtar written for that obligation, we know that that obligation carries with it that all of his assets will be obligated to pay off the loan. And not only are his assets obligated to pay off the loan, but even if that wasn't written into the shtar, we have discussed many times in our shiurim the concept of the chrayis tar sofer. And even if it's not written in, the halacha views it as if it's there. And therefore, the halacha is that if I owe somebody money, and it's something that was written into a shtar, there's an understanding that the Baal Chayv could go after any assets that I owned. the if it was al yedei edim, if there is no shtar, was there were only edim, goyim nechasim nechayrim. Then the person to whom I owe money could only collect from the chasim nechayrim, but they cannot collect any other assets. And as we often discuss in our shiurim, the difference when it was b'shtar, it was a hava b'shtar, versus when it's a hava not b'shtar, is because a hava b'shtar has a kol, everybody's aware of this obligation, and therefore when somebody bought assets from me, he knew my assets were mortgaged. And since he knew my assets were mortgaged, when he bought those assets, he took a risk in buying those assets. The risk he took is that if I won't have the ability to pay, they're going to go after those assets. Whereas when it's a milva al peh, milva be'edim, there were only edim but nothing more, there is no kol about that obligation. And therefore, the person who bought something from me had no way of knowing that there are mortgages on me. And since he had no way of knowing that, that's why they can't collect from him what he bought from me. But now, Shmuel asked the following question. By Shmuel the Ikni, when I borrowed money with a shtar, that we said that my assets become obligated. The question that Shmuel now poses, what happens if I wrote into the shtar the word Ikni, that not only do assets that I own become obligated, but assets that I shall buy also will become obligated. What will be the halacha now? And indeed, kana, and I bought the assets after I borrowed money. Mahu, will the assets that I bought also become mortgaged to the obligation? Or do we say, since at the time that the loan took place, I did not own those assets, so you can't obligate yourself to something that doesn't exist because it's a davar shaloi bal olam. And as we discussed many times, we normally say, ein adam davar mak the davar shaloi bal olam. So the Rishonim, in discussing this question, discuss if we're going to say, as we're going to begin discussing now in the Gemara, that an obligation of the Ikni is so strong that even assets that I currently don't have, I can obligate myself that those assets will become mortgaged. How far do we take that halacha? Some Rishonim say that even if we'll say the Ikni is something that I could obligate myself to, it's only if I specifically write it into the shtar. But if I don't write it into the shtar, that's not going to be the equivalent of what we said a few moments ago about Achrayis Toi Sofer, that everybody will agree the Ikni, it's only going to be an obligation if I take it on. It's only going to be an obligation of Ikni if I write it into the shtar. Some Rishonim, however, of the opinion that if we say Achrayis Toi Sofer, and if we say, as we're going to be learning in the Shia now, that even assets that I buy become obligated, the obligation is so strong that it's no different than any other obligation, and I can't. They become obligated. So says the Gemara, Aliv Rameya, according to the opinion of Rameya that says in all of Shas, Rameya, we've had his opinion so many times, Dama, the Gemara Masechta Kedushin, with somebody keeping a Kaddish a woman, even though he's not Jewish, or even though she's not Jewish, on the expectation that they will become Jewish. And the reason for Ramey's opinion in Masechta Kedushin, Daf Samach Gimel Amar Aleph, is because Ramey holds Adam Akna Dov Shalolim, Loi Tabaylach. There's no question. The Vadei Kana. So Tosfos asks a very powerful question. We've learned the opinion of Ramey many times. The Ramey's opinion is Adam Akna Dov Shalolim. But every time we learn Ramey's opinion, that Adam Makna Dov Shalolim, the way we understand Ramey's opinion is that it's in a situation where it's dekala peirosav. The fruit maybe doesn't exist, but the branch from which they're going to grow does exist. But here, if we're speaking about the Ikni, as the Rishonim, it's something that doesn't even exist And even Rameya, who holds other Makna Davish Law Belaylam, cannot say so on something that doesn't exist at all. So the Rishonim say a very important teretz that is important in understanding our sugya. They suggest that when do we say that other Makna Davish Shalom, when the Rameya say you have to have Dekel Peroysov, he only says Dekel Peroysov when we're talking about a kinyan. So in order for a kinyan to be effective, you already have to have the Dekel. But if you don't have the Dekel, Rameya says you can't have a kinyan. But say to Rishonim, here it's not a kinyan. Here it's a shibud. Here it's a mortgage. For a mortgage, Rameya's requirements are much lower. And even if it's not Dekel Peroysov, he'll hold on the Makna Davish Shalai Belaylam. Al-Kiti Bailach, the question is according to Rabbanan, that Rabbanan say, under normal circumstances, Ein on the Makna Davish Shalai Belaylam. And what will they say here? And again, the way to understand the opinion of the Rabbanan is a number of ways in the Rishonim. Number one is as we just explained. Here we're speaking about a Shibud. And as we just learned, the Yad Ramah learns the Gemara this way. A Shibud is stronger, a Shibud obligation is stronger than a Kinyan. So yes, the Rabbanan hold when it comes to a Kinyan, Ein Oda Makna Davish Shalai Belaylam. But here we're not speaking about a Kinyan. Here we're speaking about a Shibud. And when we speak about a Shibud, it could very well be that the Rabbanan will agree that there is no problem of Davish Shalai Belaylam. That's the Yad Ramah's approach. The Rashbam's approach is that we often find in Shas the concept of Shleitonal Dalas Bifnei Lovim, that Chazal want to encourage people to be able to lend, to want to lend money. If we're going to limit that only assets that the loiva has at the time of the loan are mortgaged, no other assets are mortgaged, it's going to discourage people from wanting to lend money. And we want to do that just the opposite. And therefore, the question is, therefore the Gemara is suggesting that maybe even the Rabbanan over here will agree that you can make a shibud on the ikni on something that we don't have yet. And that's why, explained the Rishonim, even though Shmuel throughout Shas has not paskin like Rameyer, here it may be different. Amar Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef, in order to answer this question, wants to bring a raya from a Mishnah in Sechtik Suvis. The Mishnah in Sechtik Suvis, Daf Kuf Yud, discusses that Ruvain presents a shtar that Shimon owes him money. And Shimon responds that he already paid it. And what is his proof that he paid it already? So the Mishnah discusses that Shimon bought a property from Ruvain. And Shimon says to Ruvain, if I owed you money, how did you possibly send me another piece of property? Why didn't you first say, pay up what you owe me? So the fact that you did sell me property after this loan became obligated is a proof that the loan was paid up. Says Admoin, that's a very compelling argument. Chum say no. The fact that Ruvain sold Shimon property is not an indication that Shimon already paid him up. Rather, Zalya Pikeach, what Ruvain did by selling the property was actually very wise. Shemachaloi Esakarka, he sold him this property because he wanted to have from where to collect the money that he's owed. And if Ruvain will have property, now Ruben has where to collect, because as we always say, you can only collect from property. Because the way he did it was that he did this by able to mortgage it. And the Gemara Masechta Ksubos goes on to say that it depends what the minig is. If the minig is that you first pay and then you write the shtar, then the Chachamim will agree to admin that Shimon could say that you should have held on to the. You should have said if I owed you money, you should have held on to the money. The Gemara there is speaking about a case where people won't give the money, won't give the property without the shtar, and therefore the shtar was written and the money was transferred and he got the property and now we have the question. But what do we see from there? That what was Reuven's thinking in selling Shimon property that Shimon did not have at the time of the loan, because Reuven wanted to have where to collect this obligation from. But if property, which is ikni, property which is not there at the time of the loan, doesn't become obligated, so what have you accomplished? It wasn't there at the time of the loan. Clearly, this is an indication that not only properties that were there at the time of the loan become obligated, but even properties that came later are obligated. Says the Gemara, Amalei. So Rava says that to Rabbi Yosef, your Rai is not a good Rai. Mene Kamrit, says the Gemara, we're speaking about the Loiva himself. When we speak about the Loiva himself, Mene Flima Glima Dal Kasvei, if somebody owes money, you could collect it from anything the Loiva has. Of course, as we learned in Masechta Metzia, that halacha does have, as we learned, some limitations. Because as we learned in Masechta Metzia, we can't leave the loiva with nothing. What the Gemara means to say, it's a very limited, when he has a right to collect from everything. So that's not a raya, that the fact that the loiva now has assets that he didn't have at the time of the loan, that's a proof that everything becomes obligated. Kikama Boilon, our question that Shmuel posed is in the situation that Ikni, where the loiva obligated himself on assets what he bought, and he bought such assets, kana, and then he sold those assets. The kana, or he bought assets, Dikni kana, he bought assets for her, and he died, and those assets were inherited by his yorshim. So now the question is, how far do we say? Do we say that those assets become obligated even though they are no longer in the hands of the loiva? And that we don't see from that Mishnah Masechta Ksubas. So Amar Rav Chana, Rav Chana tries a different Rai. Toshma, we're going to learn in our Mishnah. We learned in our Mishnah, Nafal Bais Alav Al Aviv, Alav Al Mirishav, Vais La Ksubas Isha, and this person, the son, we spoke about the father Yaakov and the son Reuven. And the son Reuven, it was obligated to pay Ksuba. Or the son Yaakov, or the son Reuven has a Baal Chayiv. And now we have a debate. Yor She'av, Oimrim HaBen Meis Rishon. The people who are inheriting from Yaakov said that Reuven died first. V'akach Meis Av. And therefore, Reuven never had assets, because those were the only, Reuven had no other assets. And Reuven wasn't able to pay off the obligation. Or Baal Chayiv Oimrim, but the people who the money is owed to, say that Av Meis Rishon. Now the Gemara makes its point. If we're going to say Dikni, that anything that comes later, Kana, and he bought, or Macha, and he sold, Dikni, Kana, v'Hayrish, or anything that the Loiva doesn't have, doesn't become obligated, even though he had it at one point, so Loi Mishtabid, so ask the Gemara, Nami, Ne, Nami, the Av Meis Berishin, even if we'll say Yaakov died, and Reuven yarshened him. Still, Diknihu, these are assets that he didn't have at the time of the loan. They came to him later, and now they're not by him anymore because he passed away and it went to his Yorshim. And therefore, if we're saying that those kind of assets are not obligated to the loan, why should there be any debate in our Mishnah? Says the Gemara, Amalur Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman said in the yeshiva, when this question was brought up, Zirin Chavra and Tergma, our colleague Zirin explained that in our Mishnah there's a new consideration. The consideration of our mitzvah Mishnah is because mitzvah yisoyimim lefray chayvus aviyim. Children have the obligation to pay off their father's debts, and since the children have the obligation to pay off the father's debt, if they got that money by Yerusha, if they got the money by Yerusha, since it was their father's at one point, they should pay using that to pay off the obligation. The Rashba says that this mitzvah, Al Yisoyim Lefray Chayvus Aviyem, applies whether the Yorshim inherited Karka or Metaltlin. Tysus and agrees, and the Baal Chayv could force the Yorshim to pay off with that. Tysus disagrees, and Tysus says that if there's only Metaltlin, then they can't be compelled to pay off their father's obligation. Tosfos quotes a Gemara Masechet Ksubos Daf Ayin Tzadik Aleph Amud Beis that even though when it's metatlin, they can't be forced to pay off their father's obligation, but they have a mitzvah to show honor to the father and pay off his debts even metatlin. The Rashi explains this is just to uphold the father's covet, that people shouldn't say that this father who died without paying off his obligation. The Rashba goes further. It says, what happens if the father did not leave over any estate? Still, says the Rashba, there's a mitzvah with the Rabbanan for the children to pay off the obligations that their father had, even if the father didn't leave them any Yerusha. The Rambam disagrees. And the Rambam says that their obligation is only to pay off if the father left them something. If the father left them nothing, not karka, not metatlin, they don't have to use their own money to pay off their father's obligation. The Hagos Ashri actually says that what is the machloikus of the Rambam and Rashba connected to? He quotes a Gemara Masechet Kedushin Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. When we have a chiv of kibbutz of the aim, how far does the obligation go? The Rashba says that the chiv kibbutz of the aim is mishel benoy. The son has to be ready to take money from his own pocket to fulfill the mitzvah kibbutz of the aim. So here, as we're saying, the obligation to pay off the father's debt is a mitzvah, the rabbanon, and for that mitzvah, the rabbanon, you have to pay it off even with your own money. Whereas the opinion of the Rambam says that you only have to use your father's money, and therefore the children do not have to take out their own money. They don't have to take out their own money to pay off those debts. There's an interesting question amongst the Achronim. What about if the father obligated himself to tzedakah? Will they have to pay it off? So the Paiskim say, if it's only an obligation, maybe you don't have to pay it off. But what would be an halacha if the father wrote a check before he passed away to tzedakah, and then the father died before the check was cashed? What is the halacha? Could the yusayimim, now this money, this bank account belongs to the yusayimim, do they have to honor that check and pay it off? Or could they say, this is not our check? And Ramosha and the Gris Moshe and the Masham say that a check, we spoke earlier in our shir about this concept of Shtara Oymer Ligvash Kegovidami, they are of the opinion that a check is considered like cash. And just like if the father had given the tzedakah cash, there would be no question that they can't ask for the cash back. Here too, they have no ability. They have no ability to ask for the cash back, and since they have no ability to ask for the cash back, they can't ask for the check back. The Klozmer Rebbe Zatzal in his Sefer Yitzev Peskom says that even if we're going to say that, the question is how did Yaakov give the Bechira to Yosef when it was a Davish La Balaylam, when he took it away from Reuven and gave it to Yosef. So it says that as we're discussing our sugya, that there's a halacha that we're talking about Ein Adam Makna Dovah Shel Bal Olam. He says when we speak, there are certain exceptions. One exception is a melech. Another exception is the tzibur. So says the Klozmer Rebbe. The question is, why did Yaakov feel the need to take away the Bechira from Reuven, because he Bilbil Yitzui Aviv. And the question was, Posh Pshat, is he had relations with Bilah. Now the question is, Bilah was Yaakov's Pelegesh. And the question is Pelegesh considered a wife or not? So he says, it's Machlokes Rishonim. Rashi says that Pelegesh is B'Kedushin, and therefore, if Reuven had relations with her, it hits like he had relations with his father's wife. The Rambam holds that Pelegesh is without Kedushin. If that's the case, she wasn't Eishes Aviv. So if that's the case, how did Yaakov Avinu marry Bilhah? Isn't there a lav of loy siyakadesha? So he says it must be that Yaakov Avinu was considered a melech, and a melech is muta bipilegish. So now we understand everything, says the Kol Zman Rebbe. Yaakov was upset at Reuven for having relations with Bilhah. And how indeed did Reuven do such a thing? The answer must be that he said Yaakov never did Kedushin with Bilhah. And the reason Yaakov Avinu was allowed to live with Bilhah was because he was a melech. If he's a melech, there is no problem of a davar shelo b'laylam. And that's why Yaakov was able to give the Bechaira to Yosef, even though it was a davar shelo b'laylam. So the Gemara said, our Mishnah cannot be used as a proof, one way or another, to the halacha of Dikni, but because our Mishnah is speaking about a case of, there's a new consideration of our mitzvah, Mishnah, and that is the mitzvah Yisayim L'Froya Chayv Aviyam. The Cheshuki Chemed has here an interesting and difficult question. He says there's a girl that who father divorced the mother, and not only did the father divorce the mother, the father really had nothing to do with bringing her up. Her mother got remarried, and her mother's husband took care of her. So there are two considerations with this man. Number one, the Shulchan Aruch says, Chayv Adam L'Chavoyd Baal Imay, and not only is the Chayv to show respect to her father's, to your mother's husband, here there's another consideration, because this is the man who raised her. And the question is, what now she has this dilemma where her father, her natural father, who didn't have much to do in raising her, brought her up. On the other hand, is a natural father, and this other person is Baal Imai. What's the halacha? So he wants to connect it to the question that we're speaking about here. When we speak about Kibbut Ov Aim, is it Mishal Oviv? Does the Kiv come from the father, or does it come from themselves? And he wants to say if it comes from themselves, she has to make a decision who is the person that she has more of an obligation to. On the other hand, on one hand, especially if she's going to come with her own children, and there's a mitzvah on Pesach V'Gadat Levincha, so a strong argument can be made because of V'Gadat Levincha, the grandfather, the natural grandfather, wants to be able to do that mitzvah. On the other hand, this stepfather did so much for her. And the question is, what is the halach in this case? And he wants to also suggest that it's connected to what we discussed in our Gemara, that if the father didn't leave them anything, then there may not be, as we said, machlokes rishonim, any mitzvah l'froya chayvus aviyam. And therefore, maybe in a case where the father didn't take care of his daughter, that mitzvah kibbut av aim is diminished. And he's very not sure what the halacha should be, but at the end he seems to feel that she should go to the stepfather's seder and not to her natural father's seder. Of course, the circumstances in every situation have to be examined before deciding such a question. So again, we're learning that our Mishnah is unique because the mitzvah Yisrael L'Froya Chayvus Aviyam. Ask the Gemara, Maskler of Ashi, because the reason here is because of that, Milvah Pehu. So then that only is in the category of a Milvah Peh. And ask the Gemara of Rav Shmuel Damit Tavayu, Milvah Peh, and a guy v'lai men yashit milvah melekuchas. If it's only because of mitzvah L'Froya Chayvus Aviyam, there is no mitzvah of L'Froya Chayvus Aviyam when it's only a milvah al-peh. Or another way of saying, that the Rishonim say, if we see that it's only a mitzvah and we can't force them to do it, so then that should be taken into consideration. So how do we understand our Mishnah? Says the Gemara, Hamani, Ramehi. The way to understand our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is following the opinion of Rameyer, Dama Adam Akna Davashah Ba'olam. And therefore, certainly anything that ultimately will be his is mortgaged to the loan. And therefore, we don't know. We have to know who yarshin it. Amar of Yaakov. So again, we're still not sure what is the halacha on assets that were bought later. On assets that were bought later, are they obligated to the loan or not? Says the Gemara, Amar of Yaakov in the Harp Koid Nishmeid Ravina. Toshma. The Mishnah Masech Tashviya speaks about Shtari Chayv HaMagdomim, the Ishtaris that were written with an earlier date, Absulim are disqualified. The reason they're disqualified is because the Shibud, the mortgage, begins from the date of the Shtar. So let's say the Shtar says that the loan took place Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, but the loan didn't take place really till Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So if we follow the wording of the Shtar, then the mortgage on these properties began from Shkodesh Tishrei. But they're not really true. The mortgage began only in Nisan, 6 months later, when they actually borrowed the money. And therefore, Shtari Chayv HaMakdama Psulim, there's a machloikis how far the Psulim. Rashi's opinion is they can't be used to collect from Karka. But the Shtar itself, that it represents that there was a loan, for that, it is kosher. The Re disagrees, and the Re says that the shtar is complete. That the shtar is completely useless. It was predated. It's completely useless. Hamucharim, but shtaris that have a later date are ksherim, and the reason that they're kosher is because the person who bought assets with that bought from that loiva assets only gains from a later date. Because let's say the loan was in Tishrei, as we said, but the actual shtar only is written in Nisan. So now what's going to happen is this person only will be able to collect from assets from that are sold after Nisan, not from assets before. So it's his own loss that he takes, and therefore it's a kosher shtar. I saw a very nice pshat in this Gemara that says Shtari Chayv HaMakdomim K'sherim HaMakdom Psulim HaMakharim K'sherim. Reb Hershel Rimanover used to explain this Gemara. The Gemara is speaking about Shtari Chayv, somebody who does Averis, and he has Shtari Chayv and he has to do tshuva. If the tshuva that he does is only Mugdomim, he only does tshuva for the Averis that he did previously. But when he does tshuva, he doesn't think about the future. He only thinks about the past, psulim. That's not the way to do tshuva. The way to do tshuva is hamucharin. Then not only do you think about the averis that you did in the past, but you also think about the averis that you, not only do you think about the averis you've done in the past, but you also think about mucharin. What's going to happen in the future? And you take it upon yourself that you won't do averis. Not you're doing tshuva for the past, and you won't do averis for the future. In such a case, the halacha is that the kshtar, that's the way to do tshuva, that's ksheir. Now, makes the Gemara's point. V'sakadata de'ikni, kona. There's somebody obligates himself for something that he's going to buy in the future. And then in mocher. Or the ikni v'kona. If he says ikni and he bought assets, and he gives them, and then they fall to Yerusha. Loi mishtabid. So then the question is, amucharon amayik sherim. Why are they kosher? Diknehu. Because, let's think about this. The loan took place in Nisan. The shtar was only written in Tishrei. The loiva is going to buy property between Nisan and Tishrei. Those properties, if they're not obligated because they weren't there at the time of the loan, if now the loan has a later date, they will be considered as if they were there at the time of the loan, but they weren't because the loan took place 6 months ago, and if we freeze only what took place at the time of the loan, so then even Mucharim should be possible. Says the Gemara again, that Mishnah about Shtar Chayv HaMakdom and Mucharim is following the opinion of Mei Dama Makta Dov Shalai B'Loilu. Amra Meshar Shemeshmei Derava. So again, the Gemara is still focused on this question, what is the halacha by Ikni? Toshma, l'shvach kakos ketzad. There's a Mishnah that in Masech the Gittin, daf mem ches on the base that says that we only collect shvach kakos b'nechosim b'nei chayim. What does that mean? Harei shemacha sod l'chaveroi. Somebody who owes money to somebody else, sold property to somebody. Harei somebody who owes money, macha sod l'chaveroi, sold property to someone else. Vishbichai, and that buyer improved the property. And now the person who, the malva, comes to the loiva, and he tells the loiva, Baba Chayv, and he says, pay me back. And the Bachayv says, I don't have any money. So as we've been learning over and over again, you go to the Lekuchas, and therefore Tarfa, he collects that obligation. And he takes the whole field, because the amount that's owed equals the loan plus the improvement on the field. Now the person who purchased the property goes back to the loiva and says that the property I bought from you was taken away from me, legitimately. You owe me money. Shugoyva goyva sa keren, menuchosim shabodim. When he collects the keren, the value of the field that was taken it, he could collect it from any property that the loiva had and sold. That's a shvach, but the amount that he spent on the improvement, that he only could collect with menuchosim neichayr. And the Rishonim explain why. Because the value of the loan is something that is established and known. And he's owed that money. The improvement is something that's very open-ended. And therefore, Chazal said you could only collect it from the Bnei Chayim. So of course the question is, if this person from whom this buyer, from whom the property was taken away from, because there was a mortgage on it, goes back to the loiva and has where to collect from the loiva, so ask the Rishonim, so then the original Baal Chayiv, why did he go to the buyer? Why did the original Baal Chayiv not go back to the loiva? Why did he get involved? So the simple teretz is that at the time that the Baal Chayiv came to the loiva had no assets, and that's why he went after the buyer. And then after the buyer paid him, ultimately the loiva did get assets. And now he's going after those assets that were those assets that were owed to him. Now, again, the question is, if he could go after the lekuchas from the loiva, so obviously the lekuchas had that they came later than he. And the halacha is that you always go after the second buyer versus the first buyer. So why are we going to him, who's the first buyer? Why is the Baal Chayiv going to him? Why is he not going to the second buyer? So the simplest teretz to answer is when this field wasn't just mortgaged, but it was a field that was made into an apaitiki. An apaitiki means that this is from the field from where it's going to be collected. So there we don't go in the order of the buyers. Rather, we look at the field that is pledged to this obligation. And if this field is pledged to the obligation, so that's the field you go after. Another teretz that they say is that what happened here is that when Baal Chayiv came to the first buyer, he was the only one that had property, was mortgaged, and everything here happened afterwards. But says the Gemara, v'sakadatech, if we're going to say that when the loiva obligates himself, the ikni, and then kono umacher, dikni kono v'hoirish, loy mishtabid, so the question is, Baal Chayiv amai goy v'shavcha. We said the Baal Chayiv, and the way we explained the Gemara, the Baal Chayiv takes the entire field from the buyer. And we said because the reason he takes the entire field, because that equals the amount that's owed to him. But the shvach wasn't there at the time of the loan. And if we're saying that anything that wasn't there at the time of the loan doesn't become mortgaged to the loan, so why would this Baal Chayiv be allowed to take that amount, even though it's part of what's owed to him? Answers the Gemara again. Hamani, this Mishnah, that Gemara is following the opinion that Mishnah, Masechta Shmita, Masechta Gittin, is following the opinion of Rameya Dama Makna Davish Shlo Beloilam, and since it's a the Davish, so even though it's a Davish Shlo Beloilam, the Allah is that it becomes obligated. Imtim Tsulaima, Dikni, so it continues the Gemara. A new question. Imtim Tsulaima Kano Macher, Dikni Kano Vahirish, Loimishtabit, then this obligation doesn't come. Haloimishtabit. So how could he collect it? Imtim Tsulaima Mishtabit, if we're going to say that it does become obligated, so why would be the halacha in the following situation? Lover, if somebody borrowed money from one person, and then he borrowed money from a second person. And the question is, v'chaz v'kana, and he bought properties, mahu, who does those property become obligated to? L'kama mishtabit, do we say the first person whom he owed money to, those assets become obligated to? Oy l'basa mishtabit, because even though he wrote to the first one that anything he'll buy will become obligated, the halacha is, we certainly understand from our shiur today that assets that you have are more obligated than assets that you will have. So when he borrowed money from the second person, he actually had those assets. When he borrowed money from the first person, he didn't have those assets. So on one hand, the first person has a stronger claim because he's first. On the second hand, the second person has a stronger claim because those assets were there at the time of his loan, but were not there at the time of the first loan. Rav Nachman Hamel say Bailon, we asked this question. We sent the question to Eretz Yisrael. The Shol Chavatam and Eretz Yisrael, they sent us back an answer. Rishon Kana, it's obligated to the first person. Rav Huna Amar, we don't know how to treat this. And Yechloiku, we divide these assets between both Bali Chayv. The Kain Tana Rav Bar Chayna Yechloiku. Amar Rav Vina, and Rav Vina comments. Madura Kama de Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi, when he taught us the halacha the first time, Amalan, he told us, Rishon Kana. They're obligated completely to the first person. Madura Basra, when Rav Ashi taught us the Madura Basra, Amalan Yechloiku, he said that the two people should divide it, the two Bali Chayv, the Hilchse Yechloiku. What is the definition of Madura Kama, Madura Basra? So the Rashbam explains that Rav Ashi learned Shas over 30 years, and after he finished learning Shas the first time, 30 years, then he spent another 30 years learning Shas, and the Gemara calls the learning the Shas the second time a Madura Basra. And actually, I found that the Paiskim say that the halacha always should be like the Madura Basra, the second. The Beis Yosef actually says that sometimes we find contradiction between the Pirush HaMishnah and halacha, between the Pirush HaMishnah la Rambam and the Rambam the Yad Chazaka. And he says, as a rule, we should always follow what it says in the Rambam. Because the Rambam was the Yad Chazaka, was written second. The Mishnah Torah Rama was written second, and that's why it's more authoritative. And he says, Rav Shlomo Kluge also says, that we find that all the Rishonim had Madura Kama and Madura Basra. They had the first version and the second version, even though they were Rishonim. And the halacha is, for example, he says, by the Rosh has Tshuvas, and the Rosh has Piskei Rosh. He says the Piskei Rosh came after the Tshuvas Rosh, and we followed the Piskei Rosh. And similarly, all Gedali Yisrael, we find that many Gedali Yisrael had a Madura Kama, Madura Basra, and the Halacha always follows the Madura Basra. Ask the Gemara. Here we're saying that their opinion is that Yechloiku. Meisvei, ask the Gemara, we learned the Gemara Masech B'Metzid, that few Dalar Amabez. The Shvach Kekaretz Ketzat, the case that we were speaking in our shiur, where somebody sold a mortgage piece of property to somebody else and that buyer improved it, or baba chayv v'tarfa, and the person and the baal chayv comes and collects it, shugoy v'goyves a keren min chosm shabadim, when he goes for recourse to the loiva, he could go for recourse after Nechos Meshabadim. But Shvach, he says, to go after Nechos Meshabadim. But ask the Gemara, if we're saying that anything that came afterwards is divided between all the Ba'ali Chayiv, so why does he collect all of the Shvach? There's another person who's going to lose out, the next buyer. So they should divide, and that's Shvach, they should divide it. Answers the Gemara, indeed. My Goiva Namelik Tani, what's the definition of the word Goiva? They collect these two Lekuchas, these two buyers, divide Chatzishvach, divide that improvement.